stop right here, and it's clear we're in a world of CMO conversation. Have a listen, and you'll hear insights for marketing acceleration. And we guarantee those insights will live up to their promise as we dig into key stats from CMO Alliance's Growth CMO Report 2024 with Morgan J. Ingram, founder and CEO of AMP. There's plenty of big stats to unpack, so rather than spend hours going over everything, check the link in the show description to grab the full copy. We're drilling into the people, both in your teams and outside it, that are going to be important in smashing your growth goals as a CMO. Hi, Morgan. Welcome to CMO Convo. How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How about yourself?
I'm great. It's Friday here. We've had some great news at the Alliance, at CMO Alliance, so feeling very, very happy right now. And I'm very, very happy to be having this conversation with you today, Morgan, because we've got some really interesting stuff to talk about today. We're going to be digging into the upcoming Growth CMO report, which I finished like literally just a few weeks ago, and it's just come back from design. It's looking amazing, but there's some really, really interesting stats that we're going to dig into. Obviously, we can't go over everything. Morgan, you know, it's a pretty big report. You've had a chance to read it.
There's a lot in there, yeah. it's a 10-part series in itself.
But we're gonna try and focus on sort of the people side of things, which I think is always a very interesting thing to talk about. And I think it's a very important thing to talk about for CMOs and marketing leaders. But before we do get into that, Morgan, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background and why you wanted to focus on sort of like the people side of things when we're talking about the stats to relate to the Growth CMO report?
Absolutely. So in my career, I've always wanted to be a marketer, but I started off in sales, selling to marketers. So I learned a lot about marketing through that. And then I started creating my own content, which allowed me to understand marketing and all those different things on a completely new level, which now has transitioned into starting my own company, AMP, where we focus on subject matter experts or influencers and activating them into content for pipeline generating content. So I'm excited to have this conversation today and speaking to a lot of marketers, talking to a lot of people. There's a ton of things that we can learn across the board.
Definitely. So let's a bit of context for the listeners, actually, before we do get started on the stat. The Growth CMO report is sort of the flagship report for CMO Alliance. It's the third iteration that we're going to be talking about today, the 2024 version. At time of recording, it's not yet published, although it should be publishing around the time that this episode goes out. So keep an eye out for that. It'll be on the CMO Alliance website where you can download it. And it's absolutely packed full with interesting stats about everything related to growth goals, whether it's who's deciding the goals, how realistic the goals are that are being set, all the way through to like, are there gaps in your tech stack that prevent you from meeting your goals? And so there's plenty that are going to be interesting to CMOs of every level, I think, in there. But today we are going to be talking about the people. And I think to start off, I think some of the most surprising stats were actually in sort of like the demographics of teams this year. One thing that jumped out the most to me, Morgan, was the number of generalists that are in CMOs marketing teams at the moment. It's 71% this year, which is way up from last year, which was only 57.5. What are your thoughts on that? Why are generalists so common in marketing teams all of a sudden?
So this is from my hypothesis. You're starting to see this in other industries and roles as well, is because there's just so much more to cover and marketing's changing so fast. If through my studies and talking to a lot of marketing leaders, we've just identified that there's so many things that you have to know now, because there's just the social channels, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, you got to know paid, got to know SEO, got to know what organic is, right? So, you know, I can keep going. So you have to know so many things. To a degree, you do have to be a generalist to be a great leader. Now, there obviously is still lanes to be hyper-focused and niched on one skill. There's nothing against that. But if you look at how fast things are moving and how expansive and creative you have to be, you have to start diving into other areas, which you've probably seen this too. I talk to marketers and they're like studying on how to do screenwriting, right? They're trying to figure out how to do shows and do production. So it's just so much more that you have to understand, which is why you see that increase in that generalist across the board.
Definitely. I think as well with sort of budgets tightening for many, many CMOs out there, marketers have faced massive budget cuts in the last couple of years. There just isn't room for sort of specialists in their teams anymore. They need those people who can sort of hit all these different duties that you're talking about just then. Mm-hmm. The time is long gone where we can afford to have like an entire team just focused on one social media channel, for example. Like I've worked in companies where we used to have like someone who's just entirely dedicated just to Twitter, like not even thinking about social as a whole, just dedicated to the single channel. And that's just not a realistic thing anymore. But I think as well, it's worth noting that the types of tools that we have access to now as marketers means maybe you don't actually need to be as specialized as you needed to be in the past, or maybe teams don't need those specialists anymore because there are technological tools can help fill the gap, like ChatGPT, for example, like generative AI can help fill a lot of gaps. I'm not saying it's a replacement for copywriters or designers and stuff.
No.
It can plug those gaps a little bit, at least.
It can close gaps. And I think this is really important because a lot of people are probably wondering, when it comes to AI, you have to be very careful to not treat it like a genie. And what I mean by that is a lot of people will put in prompts and insights and be like, this is the conclusion. This is what I believe to be true. Well, that can get you in trouble because that might be wrong, right? And so what you want to do is really narrow down and focus on how can I, as a marketer, journalist, whatever you may be, how can I put in prompts to get me 80% of the way there? And then our 20%, maybe our specialists or you as a generalist can add in your creativity and insight to go be successful. If you're not doing that, then it's going to be very difficult for anyone to use, right, that AI in the way that they need to be using it. So I think AI is great, but you have to know how to use it appropriately. Otherwise you put yourself in a bad spot.
Definitely. I think as well, that's maybe why generalists are best suited for using it as well, because they have that kind of broader awareness of how things fit together. They have a broader awareness of things like compliance and GDPR and stuff. Like if you're just having, I mean, I'm a copywriter by trade. I don't want to do copywriters down, but if you're just focused on the words, you might not be aware of stuff around like data compliance and stuff. And if you're using AI irresponsibly or wrongly, it can have massive repercussions for the company as a whole.
Huge repercussions. That's why you have to be very mindful in how you go about it and how you want to do it. 100%.
Definitely. And then at the other end of the scale, in terms of roles that have massively declined in popularity since the last year's report, video marketing really jumped out for me. Like we hear a lot in so many different reports, so many different studies about how important video is for content, how important video is, how much audiences expect video content now. To see such a huge decline in video marketing, like it's decreased to just 17.1% of marketing teams having a video marketing specialist in there. And this is before all these crazy Sora AI stuff came out that made it look like
Sora is pretty insane.
if it works as advertised. Gosh. Oh my god. But this we did this study before OpenAI had come out with all that stuff and announced that maybe we don't need video marketers in the future. But at the time we did the study, like it seemed that AI wasn't able to really plug that gap at all. So it kind of confuses me that video marketers aren't more prominent in marketing teams. What are your thoughts on that, Morgan?
So when it comes to that piece, the AI piece is crazy. My thoughts have been the same, is that AI will most likely not take over, but will combat people who do writing for a living, or maybe because the AI can at some point be able to, if you program it appropriately, should be able to get there. Video, I think, is a little bit harder. It'll take some time, but we're obviously seeing those are quick advancements in the space that are happening. So I think the reason that people don't have a lot of internal video marketers is because, one, they're finding people externally to do that. So they're like, we don't need someone full-time to do this. We could get someone through a growth partner, agency, or a contractor for when we actually need to do these videos, because they may not be as consistent in it. That's probably the reason why you see that stat. And I think number two is a lot of people think that it's expensive to do it. Now, it's depending on what you're doing. Like if you're doing something high definition, of course, I think that a lot of people think it's expensive, so they don't even want to take that route, versus if they thought of it in maybe different ways, it's not as expensive as you think, depending on what you're trying to do. So I think those are the two reasons why you see it at that length, because with current clients we work with and people that I talk to, they're looking to do more video. I just think it's just harder for them to get there.
That's really something I hadn't actually considered there, Morgan, was like the presence of agencies filling that gap. Because I suppose as well, like video, it's a very technical thing where you don't necessarily have to be that plugged into the brand voice, and you don't have to live, breathe like the brand personality in the way that a copywriter might need to, for example. So you can kind of have someone internally just guiding an external video marketer who can kind of do that. They can do all the technical stuff as long as you've got someone on hand to guide them and make sure it's suiting what you actually need from the video in terms of brand personality, in terms of the branding, exactly, and all that stuff. So that's, yeah, that definitely makes sense. Are there anything else? Is there anything else in the team composition stats that really jumped out for you, Morgan, in terms, and that you think is maybe not something that can be serviced by agencies at the moment? Is there stuff that you're seeing like declining there that you think, wow, that really, really jumped out for me?
So this is actually like pretty interesting, right? You look at this data, you look at the different roles, right? Obviously you have the generalist at the very top, but at the bottom was referral marketing. And like referrals are big, right? So I was like, huh, like why? Because I think if you think about referral marketing, if you think about referrals and sales, like based on sales data, so I'll put my sales hat on, it is the highest, it typically leads to your highest amount of like revenue and close if you get a referral, but also the sales cycle moves faster. So I found it interesting that that was really low, and community marketing was really low too. When a lot of people I talk to, they always are looking to build a community. But so that to me, those are just interesting to me why they were that low. And I think it's because a lot of people say they want to build a community and they realize how difficult it is. So they end up just being a generalist and they act as one of those things, or your social media marketing person ends up being community. But I do believe that you need to have a focus on that to some degree, which is why it's interesting that that is on the lower end.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, that word of mouth is incredibly important, and it's kind of surprising we're not focusing on that more. As you say, it's like there are sort of generalists or people who are wearing multiple hats for that, but we're a community-led company, CMO Alliance, the Alliance as a whole. Like, we're all about building these communities. So I know how difficult it can be. Like, you can't just like foist that off on like someone to do in their spare time. You need dedicated people. So if the way things are going at the moment in terms of those trends, do you see those declining further? Do you think that it's ever going to like swing back into action? People realize, oh, we need to have more dedicated people in those roles. Or do you think that's just going to like continue in this sort of downward pattern?
I think that you'll see a slight uptick in it once people realize that a lot of the motions that they run are not leading to the results that they're looking for, right? So if you look at from a perspective of outbound as it stands today, like it's impactful, but it's becoming a lot harder. And everything else, like virtual events are always going to be a great way to reach out, but it's hard to get people's attention because there's just more events, right? And so ultimately, when you think about all these different avenues, there has to be another way to do that. Well, the community that you build is important. So I think there'll be more people that will come in that are more focused on it once people realize that you can't just throw people in a group and hope that it works. You have to have someone who truly leads the strategy on a day-to-day basis and not an afterthought or a secondary task, because a lot of them are an afterthought or a secondary task that isn't effectively helpful at the end of the day.
Definitely, definitely. I want to spin a bit more about the community as well there, because one thing that just occurred to me when you said there's so many events, there's so many communities now as well. Like, if every single brand has a dedicated community, people don't have time to be active members of all these communities all the same time. So I suppose you really do need to invest a lot of time and effort into it to make it stand out or make it worth people's while in that respect. Like, when you're looking for a community, Morgan, what are you expecting in terms of like, what can it provide to you to keep you engaged?
Yeah, so that's actually a really, really, really good question here. And I'm going to speak from my own experience. But I actually was thinking about this the other day, like when I go in a community, what is important? And I think actually it's really simple. It's like three C's. What am I looking for? Number one is communication. So what I mean by that is, are people actually talking in this group, right? So like there are a lot of communities where like you go in and it's crickets. Like they talk for like 2 seconds and it was over. So is there real communication? Are people helping each other? Are people communicating how they can support each other? Like, how are they communicating and how are they going about it? And how are they making sure that they're doing the right things across the board? Like, that to me is absolutely important. And if that's not there, then I'm going to feel like a little weird about that. Number two is like the credibility of the people that are in that community. Are people sharing things that they have experienced before? Do they have backgrounds on what they're talking about? What are they actually progressing towards? What are they looking to accomplish? Like in a community, I'm trying to make sure, is everybody in there credible, right? Or aiming to be credible, right? They're trying to get there and understand where they want to go. that to me is really important because that gives me a lot of basis points on what I should be doing and what I should be focusing on to ultimately be successful for myself. But also I can help support other people that want to go do those things as well, so they can go, you know, be successful in what they're looking to do. So that's how I look at it, right? Is that, where's that credibility factor, right? And are they able to like move forward in those different ways? And then this one's interesting, but I look for creativity. So you mentioned, how could you stand out in a community? Are they doing events that maybe I wouldn't be a part of, right? There's, you could be a part of communities and like, yeah, we do like a happy hour every month. Okay, that's cool. But are they doing other cool stuff I wouldn't know about? It's like, hey, every month, this is just random, but like every month we go to like, I don't know, a paint class and we talk about like marketing. I'm making this up, but the thing is, are they doing something that's creative that's going to make me feel more, again, emotional attachment to this community? Because if you think about a community, it's all about emotional attachment. I will tell you, right, if you look at every single TV show and movie, they have the strongest communities because they have emotional attachment to the story and to the characters. Probably one of the best examples of that is the Harry Potter community. So I don't know if you've ever done this before. Well, this was actually a ton of fun. I went on a date and we did this and I was like, this is actually pretty cool. So I was dating this girl at the time and we went on a date and we went to the, it was like the symphony.
Oh, cool.
And they played Harry Potter, the Harry Potter music live while we watched the movie. Now that sounds weird and odd, but it actually ended up being like the coolest thing ever. I loved it. But the reason I'm bringing that up is people came to the symphony, watched the movie, and everyone's like in their like Hogwarts robes. like people got like Hufflepuff on, Slytherin, Gryffindor. The orchestra's like, hey, shout out to Slytherin. Everyone's like yelling. I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. But the thing is like, that's a community, right? Like it was something unique. It was something different. It brought everyone together. Everyone was like doing spells while the movie was happening. Like these are fanatics, right?
Yeah.
But it was cool. And so I bring up that example as in when you think about the community, how are you doing things so people feel emotional attachment to what you're doing? And ultimately, how are you creating a movement where people want to attach to you? That's the key.
Definitely. But then I suppose just to play sort of devil's advocate or at least to present like the devil's advocacy in this discussion is building those kinds of emotional attachments, it takes a long time. It takes a lot of work. And do you think that's why CMOs aren't getting the investment aren't getting the backing to invest in that kind of stuff? They don't have the budget to hire the kinds of people who can build those kinds of activities in the community because they have to be very, very focused on hitting these revenue targets, hitting these growth goals that they need to show sort of immediate results for. It's not long-term planning, it's short-term planning that they need to focus on if they're going to secure their jobs at the moment. Like I'm sure you've seen all the stats, Morgan, about the short tenure of CMOs out there. So I imagine that's got to be on a lot of people's minds when it comes to what they're trying to do at the moment.
I think what you're saying is just the reality of the situation. Of course, like what I laid out, like that takes time, right? Like, you know, there wasn't just like one book and everyone was like, you know, that took several books, several movies, right, to get to that affinity. And when you're building a community, it's not like, oh, we didn't see a deal close in a month, see you later. And that's what happens, right, due to the current market that we're in, where everyone's very scrutinized on the budget and the things that they're spending, right? Like, is this actually valuable for us? Are we getting the return that we need? What is going on, right? And so to your point, I do agree with you. Yes, you have to look at this in a long-term window. And if you cannot sell it in a long-term window, it will most likely not be successful, which I believe that's why a lot of community marketing evangelists don't last long either, because they're brought in to build community and build awareness. But then it switches on them when they say, what revenue have you brought in? And it's like, well, that's not why I was brought here. I was brought here to build a community. So I think, I mean, it takes time, but like you got to give people at least 6 to 8 months to really get things rolling, 2 quarters worth at least to get that going. But if you're, let's say, from the financial standpoint and the execs want that faster, it's probably not best for you to actually create a community. You may want to consider doing something else.
Definitely. I think that kind of leads on to quite nicely to talking about working with other departments and getting buy-in for all this stuff. Like collaboration with other departments, with other C-suite members is obviously a big part of hitting growth goals. And I think one of the most difficult things is obviously going to be securing that kind of buy-in for these long-term projects, these long-term emotional things, but you can't necessarily say, this is what the tangible benefit will be by the certain date. So obviously that's going to be tricky to get over the line with finance departments, with the CFO. What about other departments? Do you think it's going to be hard to secure that based on what you saw in the growth CMO report?
And just in general, are we talking about also just, are we going back to community, or are we just talking about in general?
I think if we can use community as the start, and then let's use that as like a springboard for the general talk.
I mean, I've been in this camp sales. They're going to be like, what's going on? Right. It's like, it's just the way it's going to be. Right. And now I got to go back in the sales realm. So there are going to be like, where are the leads? Where are the accounts? How are we influencing it? And that is fair. However, that's why you have to align with sales and understand who are their target accounts and who are they really looking to get in front of. And this is the biggest miss that most teams have, is they don't take the time to understand what are the sales accounts that we're looking to get in front of, and then marketing, finding ways to support that through initiatives, right? And if I know I'm looking to build a community and I'm looking to get in front of like 200 of these accounts, I should probably find ways to invite people out of those 200 accounts to this community, right? So they know our brand, they know what's going on, and you can show impact and influence based off that, right? That allows us to move in a more positive direction across the board. So within that, right, that's the key, and that's the measurement point that we want to look at in terms of that. So that's what I would do to talk to that sales team. However, if it's not positioned the right way to the sales team, and it's just like, we're looking to build awareness and like, that's it, it's harder for most sales leaders to understand that. Not to say that the marketing approach is wrong, because there's just some things in marketing you really can't attribute or you really can't look at, but that's how they're going to look at that.
Definitely. I think one of the things that you've always got to keep in mind in sort of like communicating things between marketing and sales might understand the need for sort of long-term projects like this. And they know that it is healthy for the brand, but at the end of the day, they have targets to meet, and they often get their money, their pay, their salary from those, hitting those targets in a way that marketers don't necessarily have. Marketers might get some kind of bonuses, like say annual or something like that, but they're not going to be paid. They don't have the majority of their money coming from being able to hit their sales quotas each month. So salespeople, they do need to live in that here and now, and they need to be convinced that this is going to be something that's going to be beneficial to them, like not just in the long run, but something they can have some kind of benefit from in the short term as well. And I think there is ways of talking about community as well in a way that is going to show that sort of short-term benefit. Like if you can, I mean, maybe if you can just get some quick wins out there, if you can get some of their absolute ideal ICPs in the community right from the launch, you don't just have like a load of like randos coming in. I think that's going to be something that's really beneficial. So if you think
that's the key.
Yeah, go on, Morgan, go on, what you can say.
No, I was just agreeing with you. I was like, no more than that. I was just saying like, that's the key, right? Like if you can do that, then that shows momentum, and not just like we build a community and we got, again, 50 anonymous people we don't know.
Definitely. It's all about moving away from those kinds of vanity metrics, which I think have always dogged marketers throughout their entire history in business. And I think it's very, very recently that it's really started to hit that kind of critical mass where we can't just hide behind things like engagement numbers and like reach and even stuff like awareness. Is we need to be able to show, how is that going to impact revenue? How is that actually going to provide stuff into the pipeline in the long run? And that's what's going to make CMOs into successful growth CMOs at the end of the day, is being able to show that kind of alignment to different departments.
Yeah, 100%.
So when it comes to the other departments, obviously sales is incredibly important. And this year it was great to see that collaborating with sales does have a very positive impact on CMOs' abilities to hit their goals, both in terms of the realism of the goals that are being set and also their team's ability to hit those goals. So without sales, on average, the team ability score for marketers was 6.27 in terms of their ability to hit their goals on a scale of 1 to 10. With sales, it was 7.8. So that's a pretty healthy increase right there. But one thing that really jumped out for me was the ones that were having almost like a negative impact. So finance, for some reason, the teams that were, the marketers that were collaborating most with finance departments to hit their goals were actually seemed to be operating worse, or at least having less realistic goals to work towards. What do you think about that, Morgan? Because that really jumped out to me when I was writing this thing.
It did as well, but it doesn't it doesn't shock me, right? So I actually graduated with a finance major. So I'm gonna speak on this. Like, the goal within finance is how do I invest in something and mitigate the risk as much as possible, right? When it comes to marketing, though, as we all are listening in, it's there are things that are hard to logically track or even logically even say how it's gonna work. And marketing, a lot of it is an A/B test to see if it will work. So I think one of the things is that if you don't have a creatively minded CFO, which most of the time, no offense to CFOs, that's probably not going to happen, right? If you don't have that, they may not understand why you're looking to make these investments or do these projects that sometimes don't have a true and clear ROI as much as like a sales initiative would, right? So I think when you're partnering with the finance team, I think it's showing them why these things are important, right? And how they can support you and invest. But if you are too safe and don't play offensive, then what the inverse happens is other brands that you're in the space with are going to be offensive, which is why probably you saw the negative results, because they actually were more aggressive than you and they were out there more. So I think there's probably nuances in that maybe things that, you know, could be missing in those that I don't know, because some of those are even personal conversations and more we're saying. But if I look at this holistically and I looked at that data, I was like, that's probably the reason why that's happening.
That's a really interesting way of thinking about it right there. Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we can't possibly condone not working with finance closely.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't just not work with them. That's not what we're saying. You can't just be like, all right, we're going to go rogue. No.
But I think what you need to kind of get these kinds of less logical actions away, like over the line, and then get buy-in from the CFO, is the kind of advocates from other departments as well. Like, if you can get your sales, the head of sales on board, that's going to speak volumes when you take certain ideas to the CFO. I'm not saying you need to go out and sort of like plot behind the scenes with them kind of thing, but have some conversations with the other departments before you start taking ideas to the CFO, particularly if it's quite an out there kind of thing. Like, if you can take some ideas to other departments, like the sales department or the product department or any other department that might be involved in it, and get their thoughts on it, get their ideas and how they can refine things further, rather than just going and saying like, this is the coolest, craziest marketing idea of all time.
Yeah.
Talk to the sales department and say like, this is a cool, crazy idea. How can we make it work for you kind of thing?
Yeah.
And then you can start taking that to the CFO and start having discussions with them about what kind of support you need for that.
Yeah. I think that's a great way as well, is that you need to show people why this is important and what it potentially can be. Again, with marketing, things are just going to take a lot longer. So you want to be able to showcase that across the board.
Definitely. Other things that jumped out for me in terms of the collaboration aspect was product marketing was really low, both in terms of popularity for collaboration and in terms of sort of the impact it was having.
Yeah.
Which really, like, boggles my mind. Surely product marketing should be the easiest thing for marketing
it
to work
should
alongside.
Be.
But yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Morgan?
I think, okay, so I'm not coming after you, product marketers. So when I say this is actually in kind, and I'm at your defense. So don't get hostile here. I think most people don't even know what product marketing is.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, that's not me. I don't understand what it means. I'm just saying, I don't think most people do. So, and I think what happens is a lot of people, when they look at product marketing, they're just like, all right, yeah, you're just here to educate our customers and educate our sellers on how to, like, what the product is. But they don't actually leverage them in the conversations. And so I think a lot of people, when they think of the content marketing side, which is probably what was happening here, they're going to go to the people on the creative side rather than going to the product marketers. It's like, you're literally in the product. You understand it. You understand the nuances. How can we leverage your insights to the things that you know to get to, like, new audiences, right? And that might be the case, because a lot of the marketing might be to get net new and to expand. So they're probably like, well, we're not gonna go to product marketing. We're gonna go to these other avenues of demand gen, et cetera, the other ones we saw. This is my hypothesis, you know, we'll see it to be true. But as I look at it, I talk to other marketers, I really do believe it's because most people are like, I don't really know how to fit in product marketing. There's not a collaboration. They're working in a silo, and they keep them in that silo instead of bringing them in and collaborating, which is the ultimate key here at the end of the day.
Definitely. I mean, that is the entire reason that our sister community, the Product Marketing Alliance, was set up, to try and educate people about the purpose of product marketing and how it fits in there. But Yeah, I think that it's still a fairly young discipline, or at least it's fairly young in terms of it having a title. I think product marketers existed before product marketing was a thing,
right?
But it's still not something that's it's a lot. It's often something that's done by like one person in an organization, from what I'm aware, from what I've seen in the stats and the other communities. That it's something where it's a team of one, and they have to cover a lot of different things, and people aren't always exactly sure where they fit in terms of both hierarchy and also in terms of which departments they need to be interacting with and working closely yeah. with. So maybe that's the point. Maybe it's still some more education to be done in terms of what product marketing can actually do for marketing departments and the business as a whole.
Exactly. I think as long as you have those consistencies of conversation, then that's ultimately the key of what you're looking for.
Definitely, definitely. Anything else in terms of the department collaborations you want to touch on there, Morgan? Like anything else that jumped out for you?
Yeah, I think so this was actually like pretty interesting how if you look at the customer success, it was like product and customer success had the same baselines, mm-hmm. which was interesting. And so I think it's one of those things that if you look at customer success and product, I would be interested to see the combination of both of those. Like if you have customer success and product and marketing are those three working together very close, how much more impact is that when all three are joining? Because some marketing teams could just be working with just the product, but not the product marketing, right? And then they could be working with customer success, right? But not product. I think it's important, especially as you dive deeper into like influencer marketing, things of that nature, that you actually understand how you're working with customer marketing or customer success, essentially, product and marketing. Because if you think about where the future of things are going, it's buyers want to see other buyers using their product. And the only way you can do that is you have to get tapped into customer success and you have to link that to product to show what's going on. So I think there's going to be a new way of thinking that it's not just how do I do this one thing with customers? It's like, no, we got to bring this all together to show people what's going on. So that's just another insight I wanted to bring to the table. It could be an interesting insight for people and something to think on.
Definitely. No, I think it's very worth focusing on right there as well. I think the product and customer success, I think, are going to be some of the most important departments for marketers to be working closely with moving forward. Like, marketers can't just be marketing anymore. We can't just be the people who are producing content and producing top of funnel stuff. We need to be working with the departments because we are the ones who are speaking to customers. We're on the front line. We're seeing what the market trends are. We need to be sharing that kind of information with both the customer success teams and the product teams. Like, it's a two-way street, this collaboration. It's not just about them supporting us. Us supporting them as well is going to be incredibly important, but not just 100%. To drive business success and growth, but also to secure marketers' roles in businesses in the future. Like, with so much more automation coming in, so much more technology that's going to replace a lot of roles that have been done by marketers for a long time. That kind of empathy, that kind of stuff that you can't necessarily teach an AI machine to do, that's what marketers can provide to a business in a way that other departments aren't necessarily well placed to do. So being able to open up those kind of two-way conversations about how product can develop, how customer service can develop, what customers are expecting from what success means for customers as well, and all that stuff. Marketers can be the ones who provide that information and work with these other departments to make sure they're providing that kind of service in kind.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
So we kind of touched on a little bit in terms of like what collaboration allows us to sort of springboard into and what kind of opportunities there are for growth. Let's move on to sort of where CMOs do see the most opportunity for growth. What kind of activities they're doing at the moment that really drive growth? Top of the list, no surprises, demand gen, content marketing. Like, is it worth us drilling into like why that is, Morgan, or is that, should we treat that as gospel that these are the two big
things that's it, right? I think no one would probably dispute those being the top two. So I think that's everyone gets it. Like, I think the subs sort of cool. I got it. That makes sense.
Definitely. But then Number three on the list, I thought was quite surprising, considering all the stuff we've seen about budgets tightening and stuff, but event marketing being the third biggest opportunity for growth there. Like, considering the high costs and potentially low ROI that you can get from events, like, why do you think that's so prominent at the moment?
So the reason that this is prominent, actually, there's three reasons on why. Number one is when we're talking about event marketing, I talked about to this someone the other day. It's like, it's actually not what you think. It's actually not people investing into more big events. It's doing more micro events with other partners. So we partner marketing is something that is continuously exploding. There's a lot of talk on it. I know a team out there, Nearbound, they've created this concept around partnerships and the new ecosystem, et cetera. When it comes to doing these events, most people are just not going to spend $100,000 to $200,000 on the booth anymore going to the event. And that's just on the booth alone. You got to think about the travel of your team. It ends up being like $300,000 investment. It's just not worth it anymore for people. And again, budgets have tightened. So now people are like, can I partner with two other companies where we're going after the same buyer persona to get this done? Yeah, absolutely. We could do that. So that's like number one that you're going to see. Number two is, people are also starting to realize that because it's crazy, right? 2020, we all know what happened during that year and what it created in the pandemic. A lot of people were at home. They didn't go back to work after, right? They stayed in their virtual environment. So there's now become this emergence from what I've seen and what I've talked to customers about is getting in front of people again. Can we get in front of people again? Can we have real conversations? Like, can we not just be on Zoom all day long? So that's a big piece. And then three is like, it's just easier to connect, sell, and things of that nature while you're in person. And people are going to remember those experiences. Just like I said, emotional connection with the community. You also need the emotional connections with your in-person events. But I do believe micro events is the key and the narrative and the focus here across the board on that.
Definitely. Yeah. So it's not necessarily doing less events. It's doing smarter events.
Smarter events.
Think about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose those kinds of smaller scale events as well make it a lot easier to sort of build those connections in a much more stronger and more likely to result in a deal kind of way. Like,
yeah,
you get to some of those big events and it's literally just you just sometimes it can just be you just handing out like business cards, like you're a blackjack dealer, you're just there like. whereas at like a micro event where maybe like it. If it's like a, for example, like a small scale, like dinner for CMOs or something like that, you can spend a lot of time focused on each individual there and really get to know them on a very, very personal level. We get to understand like their real actual challenges and issues. And even if that doesn't result in a deal, I mean, hopefully it will result in a deal, but even if it doesn't, that information can still be incredibly valuable. That's something you can take home and invest in and build on to actually make sure you are able to hit those deals in the future.
Yeah. And that's it. It's like nowhere to invest, nowhere to hit the deals in the future. And then it's a continuously double down on that. You may learn different things, maybe testing, but that would be the goal and the focus for sure.
Definitely. So at the other end of the scale, we've spoke about this a little bit, but referral marketing. Yeah. Absolutely crazy that it's not being invested.
I don't know. I have no idea why that's that low. I actually don't. I have no hypothesis. It actually doesn't make sense to me. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Particularly I can understand it in terms of like not having like a dedicated person responsible for referral marketing, but for them, not being seen as a major opportunity to invest in for growth. that really, really did jump out for me. Like, particularly since like, it's maybe not as important in sort of B2C kind of thing, unless you're talking like big, high dollar purchases kind of thing. But when it comes to B2B, like your word of mouth, your referral, your advocacy, that is something that's got to be like one of the most important, well, probably is the most important thing, actually having that kind of social proof, that trust from other people recommending it.
Yeah. That's why it's like, there's a stat and it's like 78% of people, if you ask for a referral, they'd be willing to give it to you. But they have to actually have a good service with you. But like they're willing to refer you. So it's interesting why the investment on referral marketing is not there, unless it's but that is going towards sales, and maybe we're missing something, or maybe customer success has got this nailed down and we're missing something. But it's just interesting how it's the lowest out of all of them.
Definitely. But then I think that offers a lot of opportunities for the CMOs listening to this episode right now, and you might read the report. Yeah, there is a big gap in what your competitors might be doing right now. Like, if your competitors aren't really working on referrals and advocacy,
right,
something you should be doing, definitely, because it's an open goal pretty much there, right there.
It is.
I suppose kind of connected to that is influencer marketing as well. Like, that was a very low statistic in terms of opportunities for growth. Only 10.5% of CMOs saw that as a major opportunity as a channel that can allow them to grow the business. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, is it because people are sick of the idea of influencers? Is it influencer kind of tarring it with a bad name, and people don't want to see like influencers connected to it?
Yeah. So I have two core thoughts on this, and there's a lot to unpack here. So number one is, I think a lot of people it's still an unknown. Mm. So it's hard to hedge your bet on something you don't know. Now, I think if we said how many people are willing to test it this year to see if it's a growth opportunity, I think it'd be in the top three. I think if you worded it differently, it'd be higher. But if it's like, this is my opportunity for growth, I don't think a lot of people are willing to hedge on it yet because they just don't know yet. So if you don't know, you're not going to put that as like your real time bet, versus we know demand generation, that's kind of obvious, right? We know content marketing, we know that content is the huge thing for B2B companies right now. But relying on someone else for the content, that becomes interesting. So you mentioned, are people getting tired of the influencer? So this is like my take on this, and my viewpoint might be different than most people's. The reason why I started the company I started, and why we call them subject matter experts, is because I think a lot of people in B2B are treating the influencer strategy like B2C. Mm. And they're just saying, oh, influencer, we'll pay you for a couple posts, we'll put you out there, we'll do those things. Now, I'm not saying a couple posts can't help. I think it's just the wrong way of approaching it. Because of the sales cycle of B2B, you know, you're gonna have 45, 90, 120, maybe a year sales cycle, versus a B2C influencer is promoting toothpaste. And it's a pretty easy decision if you want the toothpaste or not. A lot harder decision to decide if you want to invest into a cybersecurity product or software. So that's why I recommend people to think about this as a subject matter expert. You want to find someone who does have influence, but they're credible in their space. And that goes beyond the platform. And so that's just something you got to pay attention to. It's like, okay, we bring this person in, they have good content, but they also could do other stuff that's way beyond that. And then that's where you're going to see that true success.
Definitely. Yeah. It's not about, just doing a couple of Instagram posts with like a code that they can use for a 25% discount on their CRM systems or something like that. Like, that isn't how people make the kind of decisions that they make in B2B. But I think like, going back to what you're saying about partnerships, I think treating influencers in B2B, at least these subject matter experts, as sort of long-term partnerships that you work with over a long time to help them kind of almost act as like consultants for your marketing, for your like content that you're putting out as well. So it becomes sort of like, they go out and create their own content as well, but they're also helping you inform the content that you're producing internally as well. So it becomes a sort of symbiotic relationship there. Like, the idea that you can just pay someone with like a load of Instagram followers and that's going to drive B2B sales, like, that's not going to work. But if you get someone who is like, maybe like, say you're in like AI computing or something like that, or cloud computing, if you get someone who is a professor from MIT or something like that in that space to help you keep very, very up to date on the latest findings in that space, to help you understand the academic research that's got, well, to help your content team understand the academic research that's going on around it, that's going to have a lot more long-term value than an Instagram post that might get a certain number of likes on it or something like that. Like, it's that kind of working together as a partnership rather than like, oh, we've hired some influencers. I think that's the way we need to think about it. So maybe next year we don't talk about influencer marketing, we move away to a different term, and we'll see what happens then in terms of the study.
I think that we'll see. But what I've been talking to other marketing leaders about, and they've started to slowly come on my side. So we'll see. But as I'm saying, hey, like, just, we need to call them subject matter experts. That's what your buyers want. I don't think buyers want to I don't think they want the influencer term. I think a lot of executives, I don't think they think of it that way. Because if you think about influencers as in like someone who's on Instagram or TikTok, but if you're looking to buy a solution or a service, you want someone who has an expertise in a field, and I want to listen to them. So in a B2B realm, in the business creator realm, you need to aim to be a subject matter expert, not just an influencer. And I think that's something important for everyone to understand. I've been through the ranks of what that looks like. But when you're a subject matter expert, you're able to speak to things beyond just the platform, which is the key here.
Definitely, definitely. And that kind of long-term partnership can enhance your company's own credibility quite a lot. Like you can get to bask in their sort of thought leadership glow, and people think like if they're willing to partner with such and such company, that becomes a form of advocacy in itself. Whereas like if you're just going after an influencer who's got a lot of followers, is doing a lot of deals all the time and stuff like that, doing a lot of partnerships, it's very clear that you are just like, they're just doing it for the book kind of thing. But these kind of long-term close relationships between a subject matter expert and a brand,
yeah,
they can go a long way, definitely.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Anything else in terms of sort of the opportunities for growth that really jumped out for you?
I would say, think of things in, well, I think we've said it all, right? But when it comes to the content marketing, I just want to combine things, content marketing, the influencer marketing, and the events, don't be afraid to mix all those together as well. Like if you have, okay, we just go back to subject matter expert, try to do a mini or a micro event, bring a subject matter expert, right? And then get content out of that. So don't treat the ways of growth as silos. You can combine all these and do something at once. I tell people, like, if you're going to go to an event and everyone's already there, you should probably have content. Because if you don't, then you're actually wasting your time. So these are just things to think about.
Definitely, definitely. So Morgan, obviously there's lots more to unpack in the Growth CMO report. I think we did initially talk about like just doing a run through the entire thing and then—
Yeah, it's like, that's a lot, that's a lot. Yeah,
you got to grips with it and saw just how mammoth it is. So there's plenty more to explore there. So do encourage people to go out and check it out. And if you do find interesting findings you want to talk about more, I'm sure you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm sure Morgan wouldn't mind people reaching out to you as well. But yeah, there's definitely a lot more to unpack there. But in terms of sort of a general message to CMOs thinking about growth, thinking about the challenges that are ahead of them, what do you think they need to be sort of prioritizing at the moment, Morgan?
I would say find the three things that your audience is either you're hearing from in market or asking for. Like I actually would go to your customer success team. I'd send out a survey and say, how do you consume content? I actually just ask them. And then I would only focus on those three things that they say and then double down, because I could give you like what I think, but what I think is geared towards more my audience. So I'm slightly unconsciously biased about it. But if you actually reach out to the customers and say, hey, how would you like to consume content? Oh, we want more videos. We want other people to speak through your company. Then you're going to get a pulse check of what to actually do. So that's what I would actually, first and foremost, serving those customers, figure out how they want their content so you can serve it to them appropriately.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, that people first kind of idea, I think there, like, it's all well and good assuming what they want from content. And so you need to actually ask them what they actually want, otherwise you'll never know.
They're going to know.
Morgan, this has been great. Like, obviously, there's loads and loads that we could sit here all day and go through the entire Growth CMO report, but I won't force you to do that as much as I would be interested to hear what you have to say on it. But thank you very much for your time today, Morgan. I think it's been like a really interesting conversation. It's going to be an interesting year for CMOs and growth as a whole. So hopefully this report and this episode really help them out. So thank you very much, Morgan.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Well, Morgan, speaking of having you on as well, like, we talked a lot about the importance of having partners and experts and these kinds of micro events. And you are going to be partnering with us as part of as a media partner for the upcoming CMO Summit New York. I want to hear a bit more about like what you're looking forward to at that event, like anything particular in terms of talks, any like just the general vibe of the event that you're looking forward to.
I think the general vibe, that's what it is always for me, is being able to be around other people, CMOs, et cetera, people who are looking to learn and evolve more in the space. Like that's always important to be around. You want to be in that energy. On the other half of that, there is a session where it's talking about, I think they were, if I remember exactly what the description was, it was like B2C CMOs who are now B2B CMOs, how they're taking those insights to B2B. That's extremely fascinating to me. You obviously have short form video that has completely taken over the content game. So I'm just curious on how they think about it and how they're incorporating it into their B2B strategy.
Definitely. I'm very much looking forward to that talk as well. Like it's always interesting me seeing that kind of, I mean, I want B2B to be as fun and as interesting as B2C is. I want it to be able to say, like, and I think the more and stuff that we learn in terms of like how successful B2C brands build these kinds of emotional connections with their communities, with their audiences, the more powerful B2B is going to be as well. Because we're moving away from that idea of B2B just having this very like logical business focused mindset. As you said earlier, like people have stopped going into work now, like their home lives are their work lives now. So why don't we treat them as people when we're marketing to them at the end of the day?
Exactly. You gotta remember that context and have as much humanity in that as possible so people know what you're trying to do.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, there's going to be that talk and many, many more like it, and the opportunity to meet Morgan in person on March 20th. There'll be a link to where you can get your tickets and check out the agenda in the show notes. But I very much recommend checking it out. It looks like it's going to be a great event.
Absolutely.
But Morgan, once again, thank you very much for your time. As I said, been a really, really interesting conversation. Very, very interesting stats to talk about. And yeah, there's going to be probably a lot more to talk about it in the coming few months as well. So yeah, thank you very much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank the audience as well. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation as much as I have. We'll be back soon with some more CMO Convos.
Like what you heard from this CMO Convo? Make sure you hit that subscribe button and leave a rating so the whole world knows how great it was.